being ridiculed. Hi, I'm Stephanie, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I'm a little nervous because I'm not familiar with this format, but I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. And waiting to for Brenda tonight, I thought, oh, I'll sit out on the bench. It's warm out. Our house is frigid because of the air condition. I sit on the bench. I get up. I'm all wet. So I had to come in and change. That's how I started tonight. I always say that I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic because I know I deal with a disease that tells me I don't have one. And I am grateful to be here and to be of service for whatever. I did the three steps together because I feel that they overlap each other. The first step, of course, we admit we are powerless over alcohol and our lives become unmanageable. And I was telling Brenda, I can remember I was a beer drinker, and then later I went into wine. But I didn't know, that's how naive I was. I didn't know beer was an alcoholic beverage. And when we changed into, after Vatican II, we were told that we had to make changes. And of course, we made a lot of changes. And one of them was that I could go get the beer for the convent. And I always, when you think of your disease, I had to figure out I'm a mathematician. So I figured everything out. Who was, how much we needed, how much we, who would drink it. I'd always watch who would drink it. And then I would go from there. So I enjoyed it, but I was a busy person. So I really didn't always have time to keep drinking. But then when I found out that, you know, I never started with one beer. It was always two. And one for each leg. So anyway, I drank at home. I would play cards, and I drank. Well, then I got a little, you know, you start getting, there were a lot of nuns around. And I thought, oh, now we can go out. So I go visit. And this little German lady always told me a beer was good at 4 o'clock. Now, at 4, I'd go have a beer with her across the street. Then I'd come home, and we had prayers. So Hall's cough drops were the next best thing. I'd be sucking on, nobody would smell it. You know, how naive. But anyway, that was the pattern. So my life was, I was very busy. I ran all kind of programs. I worked for the diocese along with teaching and being assistant principal and being everything. We were ambitious people. And the drinking for a while was, I didn't drink a long time because it took me in very quickly. So my life was starting to get unmanageable. I didn't lose a job. I didn't get a DUI. But they didn't give DUIs too often in 1983. Today, I would have had them. I would have had them. The unmanageability. I always went to school on time, but I had that awful, as the time went on, I did this for I drank about 15 years, I think, all total. And when I first started drinking, I just drank when we played cards or I'd go across the street to the neighbor. But I didn't drink every day. But toward the end, the compulsion was there. I had to drink. I had to get through to another day. I was the assistant principal. I taught. I had altar boys church work, the whole nine yards. And then I got a diocesan job on top of that. And I had to travel around the diocese for handicap, retarded, and the deaf, plus classes. So I've always been a busy person. And so when I'd come home, that was the reason I drank. I had to relax. Or if I was worried about something, that fear and that anxiety would come in, I would have to drink. And so it became a habit. It just became part of. then I went from, if you're not an alcoholic till you go to another type of drink. Well, I went to wine. The nuns, I had, well, there were a couple little nuns at the convent, and we got a case of Manchevich cream white wine. And I was away at Christmas, and when I came back, I said, I was a coordinator of the house too. When I came back, I said, didn't we get wine? And they all had little smiles. Yeah, it was gone. So I could drive, and I found, I would start going to the state stores. Do you ever go to one? Well, the first state store, well, the beer guy too. The kid's father owned the beer distributor. And then I got a little nervous about that. So I went to another beer distributor that I did know, because I didn't want them to think we were drinking all that beer. You know? Then with the wine, that was a little easier. And I never knew you could go into a store, a state store, and just pick it up. I had to go to the place where I had asked for it. Well, this kid's father worked there, and I start getting the wine. Oh, I loved that. That gave me what I wanted sooner. I didn't go into any other heavy stuff yet. I got help before that happened. But the compulsion. You live to drink. I get up in the morning, and I go to school, and then I come home, and not every day yet, but it would start happening. And I would say to myself, why do I have to do this? I'm at that point in my disease that now it's controlling me. I cannot control it. And I went to the state store, and after I went the one day, now we got a budget. I forget what we got. The nuns told me when we first got a budget, we got $2. I said, we never got $2. We got $20. Stephanie, we got $2. Well, I wouldn't argue. Then it went up to 20. Then it went up to whatever. Well, my family was very good to me. They knew we needed money, so they would send me money. But they didn't know they were sending me money to help my habit. And so I would go to the state store, and a half gallon of Manchevich cream white was $9.49 at that time. And I figured out if I got $50 a month, that's what we were getting, I would still have $10 left to spend on what I should. Insanity. And so what I did was, the one day I went, and a girl waited on me, and she said, why don't you buy a case of it? I went through a half gallon every week. Insane. And now I was drinking at home. I wasn't into the beer anymore. Insanity. And with the grace of God and the help of an intervention, I went to a rehab. And I thank God to this day. It was funny because I came home from school. Oh, I had a phone call at school, and it was a Friday afternoon, beautiful October day. And I always was annoyed when anybody called me right before school was let out. That's no time to call anybody. So I get called down to the office. I had a phone call, and I recognized the voice. It was the general superior. So she said, come right home, you know. And at first I wasn't sure she meant at the mother house or my convent. Well, I went to the convent, and I went into the living room, and she was sitting there. She was wonderful. She said that she's in remission, but she was in remission from cancer. And she started talking to me about, she was citing everything I ever did that people knew. I didn't think anybody knew anything. I drank in the neighborhood, I drank at home. They knew everything. And this is October. She says to me, I'd like you to go to Gateway. At that time, Gateway was a big rehab down near Aliquippa. And I thought she'd say June. This is October. I have a whole year yet. Well, she says, can you be ready in 20 minutes? I was ready in 20 minutes. The compulsion to drink left me like that. Now, in the meantime, I prayed a lot. I wondered why I had to do this. I didn't know. And I didn't know anything about alcoholics. I didn't know anything about alcohol. That's how naive I was. So I was very happy. But when we talk about anonymity, the next day is a big community meeting. 200-some nuns at the meeting. What does she tell them? Where I am. Well, most of them probably knew where I was, but my anonymity has been blown forever. Am I ashamed of it? No. I'm grateful that people know that I can help them. One time, priest, he's dead now, but he went back up. But he was at the mother house visiting, and I'm coming down a hall, and he said, hey, Steph, I hear you're leading tonight. And there were nuns in the hall. I said, shut up. I do try to protect. I don't wear a badge that says I'm an alcoholic. If people know I am, I will say yes. They don't know, they don't need to know. I don't know who knows what. The sisters I live with, I don't. Some do and some don't. Some don't remember. So it doesn't matter. I am doing what I need to do. And I always say that with step one, it's surrender. That's a key word. I had to surrender. And I came back, and I went in full force into the program. Full force, both feet. My sponsor, by the way, self-appointed, was another nun. Now, I knew who she was. She was a nurse at the hospital. And she wrote and said, I will be your sponsor. Whew, she was tough. The first, maybe one night, we had a power outage, and I didn't go to a meeting at the hospital. And so when power came back on, I called her, and I said, I didn't go to the meeting tonight because we didn't have any power, and I didn't know what time it was. She said, you had been across the street to the neighbors for a drink. That was her answer. I didn't give her another. And I went to 6 meetings a week for over 10, 12 years. I still try to go to 3 or 4 now because I love the meetings. I love them. And I got involved. I was on Central Committee. I was on everything, name it. Angela made me do. And the thing about the first sponsor was she left community and moved to California. Then I had a co-sponsor, and some of the old-timers may have known her, Claire Croce. She was a travel agent. And the funny thing about Claire was I was still drinking, and I was going to Florida. And I went down to the travel place to get my ticket. She made arrangements. And I had a glass of beer before I went down. And here's this real fancy white lady, you know, and she's taking care of the... She was a cool dude. So anyway, we get the tickets, and I come home. Well, this is September. October, I go to Gateway. And the first meeting was Lawrence Group that I went to. The first one was the 512, which is no longer. But then the next one was the Lawrence Group. And who's in the Lawrence Group? Like, the travel agent. Holy. So she became my co-sponsor. And she had 40 years then. And she'd say to me, let's say, I'd be worried about something. Oh, kid, don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. Angela would be... True. So anyway, I had good bringing up. It was wonderful. I wouldn't trade the sponsors I had. Well, Angela moved to California. She left community and moved to California. And she'd come home once in the summer to come visit me. And she would say to me, You going to meetings yet? Are you doing this? Yes, I am. Are you? No. Why? The language is terrible. I said, Angela, did you ever hear of a coffee pot and two people? And that was my answer to her. When she would come back, she would never say any more to me. I love the program. I love it. I'm getting old. I'll be 87 coming up. Look at the face on her. And nobody believes it. I get more jobs now at the Mother House than I had when I was in office. But anyway, I always say I surrendered to that program. As you have to surrender. And then the second step says, came to believe. Well, I'm a nun. I should believe something. But I came to believe. The relationship I have today with God is much different than as a young sister. I don't want to get in trouble. I better follow the rule. I better do this. And when I drank, oh God, go out. Where's the car? Any dents in the car? Anything happen? Thank you, God. The car's perfect. Speeding, red light behind me. Never got pulled over. Could have. God was working with me. And I came to believe. And my relationship today with God is not a God of fear. Talk to him. Talk to him. He listens. Once in a while he screws up. And then I get mad at him. And that's okay. He doesn't care. And you can say anything you want. He doesn't care. And that is our willingness to have some kind of a spiritual being. I don't care who it is. I work with all religions. Doesn't matter. You have some higher power. Besides, I was a higher power for a long time. I was big, you know, the whole thing. But you have to have willingness, and you have to relate to God in some being, something. And it may take a long time. I remember I'm chaplain now at St. Mary's in all over the city. And one Sunday morning, I was at St. Mary's, and I had the list, and Father said, that woman's atheist. Oh, he didn't tell me. That's it. He didn't tell me. But as when a resident comes in over the weekend, we don't have any information. So you go in blind. So I'm going down a hall, and there's a new lady, and I go in. And the nurse said, I think she's atheist. I said, good. So I went in. I don't evangelize. I don't do any of that. I told her who I was, and wasn't sure what the expression would be. And I asked her what happened, and so on. Never mentioned anything, and I said, I'll see you tomorrow. She said, that'd be nice. I didn't scare her. The other nun that worked with me, I said, don't dare go in there, because I knew what would happen. She would probably evangelize her. So you know how to handle it. I don't care what you are. I played with Jewish kids. I played with all kinds of kids. It doesn't matter. And in fact, one of our nuns, I just found out the other day, a couple weeks ago maybe, that before she entered, she's a married woman, she was married to a doctor, divorced, the whole nine yards. Growing up, she was a Jehovah's Witness. I didn't know that. She's a Catholic nun. Now, my experience with the Jehovah's Witness was when I was in Mercer, we had to find out we had to do the Shenango Valley for the diocese, find out how many Catholics there were or whatever. And we were still in full habit. And I got there, and this guy comes out of his house and he says, I'm Jehovah's Witness, and you're on your way to hell. And I said, I'll see you there. So our relationship to any higher power is important. We have to have something to relate to. And that's our willingness to do. And then our third step says, we came to believe, and our third step says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand them. That's a hard one. You know, we're trusting God, our higher power. And sometimes that's shaky territory. It's very shaky. As we understood, all that's necessary is that a higher power is great, somebody greater than us. Remember I said that I thought I was it? Well, now I know I'm not it, and that this power guides me daily. Guys, I've been in cases, situations where I don't know how I was going to get out of it or what was going to happen. And God comes through. If you have to have some belief, and that's our faith. A faith in a God and a faith in a higher power, no matter who it is. I believed my God when I was drinking was, get me out of this mess. What did I say to that person? If I had an out with a teacher after having a good night out, or not out, but in a, you know, drinking, and I was feeling my oats that day, and maybe said something to them, I have to, you know, that was, I have to know that it's important that I relate to a God or somebody. And every day, before I even go to work, before I start the day, I take time with that power, that God. Usually about an hour. Somebody said, why do you get up so early? Well, if I don't pray in the morning or get prayers in at that time, a lot of times when I hit the infirmary, I never knew from hour to hour if I'd be back home. I'd be at the hospital with somebody. It was better I had some time in the morning to give to God and start my day. And you know, when I get crazy and don't start my day that way, something comes up and I have to help out somewhere, my whole day is, it doesn't seem to work right because I didn't have that contact with that higher power. And I'm grateful for the program. I think did I do 25 minutes? I am just grateful, and I want you to remember the three words: surrender, willingness, and faith. They culminate the three steps. Thank you.
Hello, Stephanie. This is the question and answer.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No questions.
Thank you, Sister Stephanie. This is the question and answer period. Anybody have any questions for Stephanie?
Thank you, Sister. That was very enjoyable and some good knowledge that I've learned from you. The questions are in this book that I have. It's called The 12 and 12. And right in the contents, step one, the last sentence is, why must every AA hit bottom? In your opinion.
I think it's important that we hit a bottom, because we'll never know how bad off we are till we hit it. And my bottom was, there are high and low bottoms. And mine was probably a high bottom because I didn't have many consequences. But we have to be, I think it has to happen. We have to hit something. We become despondent. There's no hope. And that's where we have to turn and get help. And that's what was happening. I didn't know why I had to do it. What was going on with my life? And I had to do something.
Thank you. Very good. The next question that I have on step two, it says in the first sentence, what can we believe in?
Anything. Anything at all. Could be a tree, it could be the program. A lot of people just believe in the working of AA, and that's okay. It's something. You're believing in something. When I came in and saw all the people and knew they were making it, I had a good friend. Some of you might remember Wilbur. He was my boyfriend. I like men. He was unusual. He drank from the time he was 8 years old on a merchant ship. As his parents, he didn't even know how many siblings he had. Came from Jersey, came to Erie because he was drunk in 48 of the states. He said we didn't have the 50 at the time, and he was in prison. He was a character, and he got this program. He was hit by a car. There was a bar on 18th Street. I forget what it was called. And he said he had a running gait. Now, I don't know. He drank that much. It's a wonder he wasn't dead. But he got hit by a car one way and another car the other way. Took him to the hospital. No broken bones. But he wound up in the alcoholic ward. And he wasn't going to stay. And he worked at a bar on 14th Street. And he called psychologist that was working with him. Shrinks. Oh, he had names for them. But anyway, he became sober. He had 20 years when he died. He came in at 70 and died at 90. And besides that, the funny part is, he became a Catholic. One day I had him out. We were going to the general service meeting, and we were down by Lampy Marina. It was a beautiful October night, and I don't know what I said to him about something about being baptized. That's all I said. Baptized? He said, "I'm not baptized." I said, "You're 78 years old. Do you want to be baptized?" Yeah. And I knew a lot of ministers. In fact, I preached in a couple of Protestant churches, and I had some nuns not talking to me for a while. So anyway, I said, "Well, I know some ministers. We could get you baptized." He said, "I want to be Catholic." I said, "Oh my God, I never did RCIA." So I had it by the nun that lived with me did RCIA, and I said, "Hey, Paula, you know Wilbur? He wants to be Catholic." Okay, so I'd pick him up on Saturday morning. We'd have a few classes. Man was brilliant, very brilliant. A couple classes, took him over to the rectory. Monsignor Nash was president of Gannon at one time. We want Wilbur baptized. So we get him baptized upon Sunday, the Saturday before. He gets baptized. So about 2 weeks later, Paula says to me, "You know what? We never had him go to confession." I said, "That's all right. We don't take the deaf kids to confession either. That's all right. And he can't hear." So she said, "We better talk to Monsignor." So we did. So I picked him up another Saturday, brought him to Monsignor. He comes out to church, and he goes in the sacristy with Monsignor. In and out. Paula looks at me, and I look at her, and I said, "Oh, my God, what did he tell him?" Monsignor knew all about drunks. He said, "You've done your fifth step. You're all right." And that was it. And he always lorded over me about that I have to spend more time than he did in confession. So, whatever the question was.
Very well. And then the other question is, step three, you had said something about, you know, made a decision to turn our will and lives in the care of a God as we understood him. And you said that's a little sketchy, or I didn't know.
As we understand?
Yeah. You said that.
Whatever you understand the higher being. Whatever you understand your higher being, right. It could be anything.
That's what you meant?
That's what you meant by saying sketchy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wasn't sure, so I...
Yeah, anything at all.
You ask.
Next question.
Oh, boy.
Thank you so much, Sister Stephanie. I have a real philosophy question. What am I trying to say, Gil?
It's your question.
Okay. How do you know what God's will is?
I think it through people. Through people. That's how I know it. Through superiors, through bosses. Sometimes they're not always accurate, but you pray about it, and then if it feels right, you move on it.
Thank you so much for your great speech tonight. For somebody that was raised Catholic but never practiced much, what would your recommendation be for connecting with God, as I believe in God? And secondly, what section of the Bible would you recommend
New
starting?
Testament.
New Testament?
Gospels.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Luke is one of the best. Luke was a doctor and a historian.
Okay.
And he's the most human of them, Luke.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. My name's Lauder. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm curious to know... how would you characterize your understanding of God before and after you came into AA? If there was any difference at all, how would how would you characterize that?
Oh, I had a fearful God. I was on my way to hell. Like the Amish guy. I almost, you know, I felt I was going to go to hell. And now I have a God. Every once in a while I get a little nervous, but I think I'm living the life that God planned for me now. And I think that's what we do when we're in AA. We try to live the best lives we can.
Thank you.
I told you no.
I know, but I don't listen.
I know you don't.
Thank you, Stephanie, for everything you said today. I have a question about you as a sponsor regarding the first three steps. I know you're a busy person, and I know your sponsor was hard on you about what you should do or shouldn't do. How do you determine, in my experience with you, was that you approached me and said, I'll be your sponsor. And I'm like, I didn't ask. But, you know.
She had so many times, she had to have somebody say, I'll
mm-hmm.
do it.
And I know you're so busy, but how do you go about like that service of picking somebody that you know needs help? You know, newcomers always have trouble with the first, second, and third steps, mostly the first. But is that because your sponsor kind of encouraged you to watch for people that you think need help? And by the way, I think you're kind of like the flying nun because you're all over everywhere. You're always around.
I am. My principal told me once I was like manure. I said, how about Manta Ray? It sounds better.
You must have thought I needed help.
Well, you had been through so much and you were struggling so much that I thought, maybe I can help you. And I've had some that don't want it, and I have some. I have one that has three big books, hasn't read any of them. So what do you do with it? It helps you, though. It makes you appreciate more the program, and it's not a program. It's a way of life. It's a way of life. When we first come in, we think it's a program because there's certain things you need to follow. But it's a way of life. And I only have today. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. People plan my... I have one night that plans everything for me. I said, stop planning. I'll make my own decisions. But she's so used to doing that. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. I have an idea. And somewhere I read that you do have to plan, but you don't always know the outcome, and just go with it, flow. And there are ups and downs. I've had ups and downs. But you go, after I came into the program, I lost all my family members, one after another. So, you don't drink over it. You don't drink over it. And I'm grateful for the program. Grateful. You, Doug, you had a question.
Good evening, and thank you for your talk tonight, Doug, alcoholic. So, in step two, it talks about restoring us to sanity. Were you able to relate to that? Did you feel insane?
Sure. I wondered why I had to keep doing what I was doing. And, you know, not knowing that this disease does that. And we have a nun, which is sad. We had to send her to St. Mary's Home this year. She's a wet brain. Drank too much. And it's sad. But that's what happens. Oh, and I never knew any nuns drank. And my first sponsor, I thought she was only an alcoholic till I heard her lead, because she was a nurse practitioner, worked at St. Vincent's, had the capability of getting every drug under the sun. If she was in rehab for over a year and a half in Jersey, because that's how bad she was. So that's why she was hard on me.
Thank you very much, sister.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great job.
I didn't tell you I was scared to death.